Shrita, maintained by transcendental education. Tanahu, body. Ushiti, free from material contamination. May, my. Purani, eternal. Yena, by whom? Iha, in this material world. Satvam, the mode of goodness. Paramam, supreme. Pavitram, purified. Shamaha, control of the mind. Damaha, control of the senses. Satyam, truthfulness. Anugraha, mercy. Cha, and. Tapaha, austerity. Tatiksha, tolerance. Anubhavaha, realization of God and the living entity. Cha, and. Yatra, wherein. So translation. The Vedas are my eternal transcendental sound incarnation. Therefore the Vedas are Shabda Brahma. In this world, the Brahmanas thoroughly study all the Vedas, and because they assimilate, that means they understand and they take within themselves, the Vedic conclusions, they are also to be considered the Vedas personified. The Brahmanas are situated in the supreme transcendental mode of nature, sattva guna. Because of this, they are fixed in mind control, shama, sense control, dhamma, and truthfulness, satya. They describe the Vedas in their original sense, and out of mercy, anugraha, they preach the purpose of the Vedas to all conditioned souls. They practice penance, tapasya, and tolerance, tatiksha, and they realize the position of the living entity and the Supreme Lord, Anubhava. These are the eight qualifications of the Brahmanas. Therefore, among all living entities, no one is superior to the Brahmanas. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. This is the true description of a Brahmana. A Brahmana is one who has assimilated the Vedic conclusions by practicing mind and sense control. He speaks the true version of all the Vedas. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter, text 15, Vedaischa Savar Aham Eva Ved Yaha. By studying all the Vedas, one should come to understand the transcendental position of Lord Sri Krishna. One who actually assimilated the essence of the Vedas can preach the truth. He is compassionate to conditioned souls who are suffering the threefold miseries of this conditional world due to their not being Krishna conscious. A Brahmana should take pity on the people and preach Krishna consciousness in order to elevate them. Sri Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, personally descends into this universe from the spiritual kingdom to teach conditioned souls about the values of spiritual life. He tries to induce them to surrender unto him. Similarly, the Brahmanas do the same thing. After assimilating the Vedic instructions, they assist the Supreme Lord in his endeavor to deliver conditioned souls. The Brahmanas are very dear to the Supreme Lord due to their high sattva guna qualities. And they also engage in welfare activities for all conditioned souls in the material world. So, Dritattanuruchati me parandi ineha sattvam paramam pavitram shamodamat satyam anugrahascha tapastitikshanu babascha yatra. So, Om Aganat Vidanda Shah. Gananjana Shalakya Chakshurun Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So Prabhupada many times uses this word in the purport in the verse, assimilate. So it's a very interesting word. For example, generally that word was used in relationship to food. You understand? It's like if you eat food, but that's not the same thing as assimilating it. Like you can eat something, but if you don't have good digestion, what happens? You get sick, or it goes out, or whatever. You don't acquire the energy from that particular food. So to assimilate the food means you digest it. Not only do you digest it, it becomes transformed into blood and distributed to various organs in the body. It goes into the mitochondria in the cells, which is the powerhouse for all the cells. So that's really what happens with food. That's called, I've assimilated my food. One who has good digestion, he can assimilate food. So there's a difference between reading the Vedas and assimilating the Vedas and understanding the Vedas. So let's first of all speak about what the Vedas are. Does anyone know what the word Veda means? Knowledge. What does Vedanta mean? The what? What does it mean? The conclusion, or ultimately what knowledge is all about. So, as far as the Vedas are concerned, according to most Indologists, there's four, let's say, older Vedas. That's the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Tarva Veda. And Rig, Sama, I said Rig already. Rig, Atharva, Sama, and what is the last one? I forget. There's the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Sama. So the Rig Veda is the Veda of hymns, Sama Veda is the Veda of music, Atharva Veda is the Veda of actually curses and weapons and stuff like that. Ayurveda. No, not the Ayurveda. The Ayurveda is not one of the original Vedas. You're just, because you're a doctor, you're saying that. And give me a second. And Rig Sama. Yajurveda. Thank you very much. So there's the Yajurveda, which is the Veda of sacrifices. The Yajurveda, Veda of sacrifices, Samaveda, the Veda of hymns and music that and rhythm. Then there's a Rig Veda, which is the Veda of the different hymns to the demigods and hymns to the Supreme Personality of God. And then a Tarva Veda, which sometimes deals with the weapons. And a Tarva Veda has some of the Ayurveda within it, you understand. So the Ayurveda is not one of the original Vedas. So those are the four Vedas. And after the four Vedas, then you get what's called the Upanishads. The word Upanishad, does anyone know what the word Upanishad means? No one knows what it means. What? No. What? I can't hear you. It means to come closer. You understand? To come closer. And basically, it means to come closer to the spiritual master to understand Vedic knowledge. And then after the Upanishads, there's a commentary on the Upanishads. Does anyone know what the commentary on the Upanishads is? No. You should learn all these things. The Vedanta Sutras. The Vedanta Sutras, beginning with, of course, Atato Brahmagyasa, now is the time to look for the absolute truth. Janma Jasya Yataha, the absolute truth is that from which everything comes. The Vedanta Sutras are... Sutra means thread in Sanskrit. And so they're basically very short statements that elaborate on, they're called codes, that elaborate on different Upanishads. And then after the Vedanta Sutra, or Vedanta Sutras, then you have the Itihasa Purananam. Then you have the histories. Histories, can anyone name one history? What? Mahabharata. What's another one? Ramayana. Those are the itihasa. The word itihasa means itihasa, thus it happened. In other words, it's something that happened in the past. Thus it happened. And then after that, you have the Purana. What does Purana mean? Does anyone know what Purana means? I think it's the same word in Hindi. It's old. Same thing in Hindi, right? Old. So then you have the Puranas, but the Puranas are different than the Itihasas. The Puranas, there are 18 major Puranas, 63 people in each mode of nature. And the best of the Puranas is the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is called the Bhagavat Purana. Mm. And this Bhagavat Purana is considered to be the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, or the Vedanta Sutras also. All right. So, therefore, you have different Brahmanas who specialize in different parts of the Vedas. And you have Brahmanas, so-called Brahmanas, who consider only the four Vedas to be authentic. What is that group called here in Fiji? The Arya Samaj, right? They are, only the four Vedas, they say, are authentic. Everything else, forget about. Although, in the four Vedas, you have the statement, Itihasa Purananam. That you have the statement in the Rig Veda that referring to the histories and the Puranas. And also you have the statement in the Rig Veda referring to Om Tad Vishnu Paramantara Pashanti Yat Suryaha, that all the demigods, they're worshipping Vishnu. So they ignore that part of the Rig Veda. It's really interesting. Conveniently, the Arya Samaj, and also there's another group called the Brahmo Samaj. Anyone's heard of the Brahmo Samaj? That's the branch of the Arya Samaj that's in Bengal. You understand? And so they only consider the four original Vedas to be authentic. And so therefore, they consider that the goal of human life and the process of whatever is performing sacrifices. Right? They do havans, sacrifices. Om Swaha. Dabur, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. That's what they do. But they don't like deities. And, I mean, they can be very nice people. We're not criticizing any people in particular. But they only accept the original four Vedas. And they don't understand the conclusion of the four Vedas. They think, and that's called, in the strict understanding, that's called the Karma Mimamsa philosophy. Karma Mimamsa, there's many different Vedic philosophies or Indian philosophies. Karma Mimamsa is one of them. That if you do things nicely, you know, you do your sacrifice nicely, you act nicely, it doesn't matter whether there's God or it exists or God doesn't exist. It doesn't matter whether demigods exist or demigods don't exist, because they have to do whatever, they have to serve karma. You understand? Everything is karma. It's called Karma Mimamsa. So that's the four Vedas, original four Vedas, one can become confused like that with the Karma Mimamsa philosophy. However, if one studies the later, what's considered to be the later Vedas, like Bhagavad Gita, of course Bhagavad Gita is contained within the Mahabharata, then one will understand the purpose of the Vedas. And as Prabhupada quotes here, Vedaischa Savera Ahameva Veda, the purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. Otherwise, people don't understand why study all these things, what is the purpose of all these things. And so to be an actual Brahmana, the point I'm making, is to understand the purpose of what you're doing, or the purpose of the Vedas. Otherwise, they're ritualistic Brahmanas, or even worse, they're Brahmanas who are doing their brahminical activities to make money. Now, that was a big problem in India about 2,000 years ago, a little more than 2,000 years ago. It's still a big problem. Like here in Fiji, of course, you have pundits. And in India, you have the Brahmanas, which is the same thing, basically. And it was a business. So about a little over 2,000 years ago, the Brahmanas basically had a monopoly on practically everything. You couldn't even step on a shadow of a Brahmana without getting beaten up. Isn't it? I mean, if you stepped on the shadow, like you're walking down the street by accident, you stepped on the shadow, everyone cutting you said, kill the guy. You stepped on the shadow. I mean, they were just like the heads of, so-called heads of society. And so if you needed anything done, if you wanted to get married, if you wanted, even if you wanted to die, you had to ask permission from the Brahmanas. You understand? Can I die? Well, first you have to give me a donation. Then you can die. No, to do a funeral, to have a marriage, to give your son a name or your daughter a name, to do anything, to send your kid to school, to retire, to have a new house. You know, you have all these samskaras, right? There's a namakarna, vivaha yagya, the chalk ceremony, then there's the antyeshti, the funeral. Anyway, there are all these different samskaras. So the Brahmanas, they had a monopoly. You know, I guess it was like the government wouldn't let it, like the doctors now. They have a monopoly, you understand? So now the government's preventing more doctors from becoming doctors. So the doctors, the present doctors can make more money. Because that's the law. That's the law of supply and demand. You've heard of that before? If you've studied economics, you study the law of supply and demand. When you keep the supply down, guess what happens? And the demand remains constant. Does anyone know what happens? Anybody here study economics? What happens? The price goes up. And if you increase the supply, the price goes down, right? Increase the supply and the demand remains constant. So, understanding economics, these so-called Brahmanas wanted to keep the supply down, because otherwise, keeping the supply down means you have to be born in a certain family to be considered to be a Brahmana. You have to have a certain last name, something like Sharma or Trivedi or Chaturvedi, Dwivedi, right? That's your name. You have to have Gotra. You know, they ask you, what's your Gotra? What's your name? And so the Brahmanas, they were very happy because they were taking the Vedas, the four Vedas, and they were saying, boy, this is a good way to make money. Just like someone may work with heavy machinery to make money. Someone may be a doctor. Someone may be, what other occupations do we have here? Working for the government or working for the bank. So the Brahmanas, they said, this is great, you know, we'll become rich. So the Brahmanas were becoming rich because they had a monopoly. And people got really upset with this. And they said, we got to do something about this. And also the Brahmanas were engaged, so-called Brahmanas, were engaged in offering animals, the animal sacrifice, even though it's prohibited in Kali Yuga. Gomeda, Ashvamedha, prohibited in Kali Yuga. So the Brahmanas were offering animals and sacrifice. You could pay a little money and have a goat offered to the goddess Kali. Like if you wanted to eat meat, then you call your local Brahmana. Right? You say, my dear Brahmana, my family's hungry. So the Brahmana would offer a goat and whisper in the goat's ear, Mamsa Kadati, the next birth you'll get a chance to eat meat. That was the mantra they had to recite. So these Brahmanas, they were very happy because they had a lot of money. And they had a lot of computers and cars and everything like that. They drove around in BMWs. No, I know they didn't do that. So anyway, they were the richest members of the society. But the other people in society got very upset with them. They said, how is this possible? These people are cheating us. So they had a coup against the Brahmanas. And the coup was called Buddhism and Jainism. You understand? And actually, there was a whole group of Aranyas. I mean, there's three different ways they rebelled against the Brahmanas. One is the Buddhist religion was formed, and Buddha, of course, rejected the Vedic literatures, and the Jain religion was formed. Of course, the Jain religion, Prabhupada comments on later on in this volume, the Jain religion was a perversion of the followers of Rishabhadeva. Lord Rishabhadeva performed this Jata Yoga, and then there was this nonsense king called Arhat who followed him. Jata Yoga means you just like sit and don't do anything. You sit in your own stool. You just whatever. You run around naked just to become detached from this world. And so Arhat, he imitated Rishabhadeva, and he did different things. Like he used to pull the hair out of his. You understand? That's one of the things that Jains sometimes do. Do you know that? They pull their hair out just to... Anyway, it's not that important. So anyway, there were these rebellions, and then there was the Aranyas, I mean, those who went to the forest, they still accepted the Vedas, but they went to the forest in order to get away from these Brahmanas. And they thought there's something higher in life than just... the Arya Samaj, because it wasn't the Arya Samaj then, but it was the predecessor or the origin of the Arya Samaj. So they thought there's something higher, so let's go to the forest. And then they had their own literature, the Aranya literatures. These are supplementary to the Vedic literatures. And they studied the Upanishads, and they also studied the Itihasas and the Puranas, and they understood more about the Vedic understanding. So you had these three groups revolting against the Brahmanas. So we practically follow those devotees or those personalities who went to the forest. You understand, to study the Veda, the Puranas, and Itihasas. And they had the true understanding, at least they developed the true understanding of the Vedic literatures. So to be a real Brahman, one has to be uninterested in Brahminical activity for making money. That contrasts with those Brahmanas who had a monopoly, were making so much money doing sacrifices, you know, charging, we'll do your half sacrifice, Griha Pravesh, we'll do that for $50, we'll give your child a name for $100. They had a whole price list. You understand? There's a price list, a monopoly price list. So a real Brahmana, he performs his activities without any desire for pecuniary, that means financial, reward. He performs his activities to please the Lord. And he depends, a real Brahmana depends on charity. Charity doesn't mean you charge, but if people give you, it's all right, and if people don't give you, it's all right. A real Brahmana will preach whether he gets paid or he doesn't get paid. Whereas someone who is not a Brahmana, he performs for payment. And when someone performs his spiritual activities for payment, his consciousness gets polluted. Because his mind is on money or payment or material goods rather than pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, a Brahman is voluntarily poverty-stricken. So his authorized means of making a livelihood are yajan, yajan, patan, patan, dana pratigraha. These are the six means. That means getting charity when he performs sacrifice or teaches others how to perform sacrifice. Yajan, yajan, patan, patan. Teaching others in general about the Vedic literatures or getting donations like that. And he gives charity, dana pratigraha, and he also accepts charity. So these are the authorized methods. If one, as a Brahmana, does his spiritual activities and makes money in any other way, then he loses Brahminical status. And ultimately, as we mentioned yesterday, the Brahmana has to know Brahman and therefore be established in the Sattva Guna. Sattva-guna means the mode of goodness, and as described here, he has to develop or manifest these qualities of shama, dhamma, satcha, anubhava, tatiksha, tapasya. These are all qualities, of course, that are also listed in the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, in the famous verse, sama dhamma tapaksha cham, shanti rajva mevacha, jnana vijnanam asti kyam, brahma karma, svabhava cham. So that's a real brahmana. So when we find a real brahmana, we should inquire from him about the absolute truth, whether or not he is born in a Brahmin family. Like later on in this volume of Srimad Bhagavatam, you have the story of Jatabharta. Jatabharta is Bharata Maharaj's second incarnation. First he appeared as a deer because he got attached to a deer, and then after that he appeared as Jatabharta, means like someone who is dumb Bharata. And he did that so that nobody would harass him. He acted dumb so that no one would force him to get married, to go to school, to go into business, right? Like if you act dumb, everyone will leave you alone. And if you show some intelligence, I gave the example yesterday that when I was young, I did very well in school, so my mother tried to force me to be a doctor. That if I had done very badly in school, my mother would have said, hey, he's useless anyway. Let him join the Hare Krishna movement. But because I was doing so well, my parents, it was a real struggle to join the Hare Krishna movement. My mother still says, even after 50 years in the Hare Krishna movement, you can still become a doctor. Can you imagine? I'd be the oldest doctor in medical school. So in other words, Jatabharta, he acted dumb so his parents wouldn't force him to do anything. And he acted so dumb that they appointed him one time as the palanquin carrier for this king named King Rahugana. And so he was carrying the palanquin. You know what a palanquin is? Yeah, palanquin is like a platform upon which the king sits, and he has different carriers who carry it. You might have had that in Fiji in the old days too, like the chiefs, they would sit on palanquins. I'm sure it was like that too. Many cultures it's like that. So he was sitting on the palanquin, and Jatabharta, they thought he was just stupid. They thought all he can do is, he has big muscles, all he can do is carry the palanquin. But he was such a great devotee that as he was carrying the palanquin, he was looking down to make sure he wouldn't step on any of the ants. And so when you're looking down to make sure you don't step on the ants and you're jumping up and down to avoid the ants, the palanquin starts shaking. It's like the roads in India. There's pothole, you know what a pothole is? Holes in the road like every 2 centimeters. So the poor king was like this, you know, shaking. He started yelling at his palanquin carriers. He said, palanquin carriers use bad words. They're useless. And they said it's his, and the palanquin carriers said, it's his fault. He's the new one on the block. He's the one who's causing this. And then the king started insulting Jatabharta. And he said, you know, you're useless. You're just a weakling. You know, like if we insulted someone, you're ugly, or you're just a weakling. Or you're fat. I don't say that to anyone anymore. It's dangerous. Or whatever, you're stupid, right? You don't say that to people. So the king was insulting him like that. We understand you're very strong, or, you know, sarcastically like that. And then Jatabharta, he came back with some philosophy. He said, actually, I'm neither fat nor skinny, nor intelligent, nor stupid. I'm not the body. And as soon as he began to speak, then the king understood he was a Brahmin. That's the point I'm making. And the king jumped off the palanquin, offered his dandavats at the feet of his palanquin carrier. Pretty good, isn't it? And he said, please forgive me. He said, I'm afraid of committing offenses. This is an interesting verse. Where King Rahugana says, I'm not afraid of the thunderbolt of Indra or any of these things or death, but I'm afraid of committing offenses against the lotus feet of devotees. This verse we should all learn. That he is not afraid of anything in this material world except for committing offenses against devotees. So as soon as he understood that this Jatabharata was a devotee and a Brahmin, a real Brahmin, even though, you know, he was dirty. Actually, Jatabharata was dirty. He had a Brahmin thread, but he hadn't cleaned it in like 300 years. So it was just like completely black. So he looked like, you know, just like a bum. You know what a bum is? No, you don't know what a bum is. A bum is someone on the street who hasn't taken a bath for 30 years. Just like in one of our temples. One time I was in a temple in the city in the United States called New Orleans, and there's a lot of bums there. And so devotees invited them to class. You know, come to my Sunday feast class. They said, come on, you want to take prasadam, you've got to come to the class. So in order to go to the temple room, they had to take their shoes off. And because they took their shoes off and they hadn't bathed for so long, I couldn't breathe. I was sitting there trying to give class going, he said, I can't speak. He said, get them out of here. So, you understand the principle? So that Jatabharata, he looked like that too, because he was covered, Jatabharata. But the king, hearing, that's the point, hearing that he knew the absolute truth, Yasmin Vigate, Sarum Evam Vigatam Bhavati, that means one who knows the absolute truth knows everything, then the king offered obeisances to this person who looked like a bum, like dirty. So that's how we can tell whether someone's a Brahmin. That was the point I was making. By what they say and how they act, too. Not by how they dress, not by their family heritage, not by what country they're born in, but what they say. Prabhupada said, he gave the other example, too. Prabhupada gave the example, a story. He said, once upon a time, there were all the animals in the forest. There's many stories. This is from the Hitopadesh. You've heard of the Hitopadesh before? Hitopadesh is like a book from India of parables, you know, metaphor stories that illustrate different things. He said there were many animals in the forest. And, of course, who is the king of the forest? The lion, right? Lion King? You've heard of that before? He was the king of the forest. So he's sitting on his throne. So there happens to be a jackal. You know what jackal is? Jackal is like a wild dog. So the jackal, somehow whether it was a human being, he spilled some paint, like purple or gold paint, on the jackal. And the jackal looked like amazing, like he came from the spiritual world or something. I don't know. But anyway, he looked unusual. Nobody identified him. They thought, wow, he can be our king. Because he's so unusual. Just like here in the South Pacific, when during World War II, when people would parachute into certain countries they'd never seen planes before, they thought, wow, it's God coming. Isn't it? There was these cults called the airplane cults like that. Anyway, that's a typical thing that happened. So they thought, this jackal... So they said to the jackal, please accept our obeisances, all glories to Prabhupada. You know, not really. But so they put him on the throne. And the jackal was sitting on the throne all day long, enjoying life, because everyone was offering obeisances, offering him food. And then it came time for dusk, for the evening. And has anybody heard jackals before? In Mayapur, there's so many jackals. In the evening, you hear them howling. It's worse than the dogs here. They howl at each other. And so in the evening, he was sitting on the throne, and then he opened his mouth, and he started to howl because he heard the other jackals, so he was just responding. And then the other animals in the forest understood, this is just a jackal. So then the lion, who was previously king, he said, Sharira vijaja jatendra tehekala jiva phalaya vishaya sagare dharmade juayati. Let's take prasadam. So the poor jackal became Flying Prasad or something like that. So, Prabhupada tells that story because you can tell whether someone is qualified by what they say. As long as someone keeps their mouth closed, they can do it. They can look like anything. But as soon as they speak nonsense, we understand they're a jackal. So that's the point. The Brahmana is known by his qualifications and Shabda Brahman, as mentioned here, by what he says. So any questions or comments about these points? Questions, comments, arguments? No? Certification. Do you can you hear what he asked?
He's saying sometimes when you take prasadam, the Mangalati prasadam, okay?
Yeah.
Then some devotees are offering prasadam from there, they are washing their hands from the ashram cup.
Yeah. People should wash their hands in the sink outside. There's actually many things I was just reading that we have to be very careful of. I was just reading, Prabhupada wrote that even that it's an offense even to step on the shadow of Tulsi. You know, even if you have Tulsi Devi and there's a shadow, it's a big offense to step on Tulsi Devi's shadow. So we have to be very careful. But that one of the primary qualities of Brahman, actually it's not mentioned here in this verse, but it's mentioned elsewhere, is cleanliness. Clean internally and clean externally. So he's always very conscious about cleanliness. Cleaning hands before eating, cleaning hands after eating, washing the mouth out, bathing regularly, changing clothes, cleaning the clothes like that. So cleanliness is actually very much connected with Brahminical behavior, of Brahminical qualities. Anyway, the main point I was making here was the speaking of the Brahmana. That's how you know a Brahmana, by what he says. And that's how you know the difference between a fool and a saintly person, or the fool and an intelligent person, by what they say. Okay, I think we have to end now. Thank you very much. All glories to his divine grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.